Welcome to the Water Channel Podcast, a series of conversations on water, food and agriculture. We feature stories and insights that are defining our present and are shaping our future. I am Abraham Abhishek. More than a third of Pakistan is underwater since mid-June. Most of these areas are in Balochistan and Sindh, two of its biggest provinces. These are perhaps the worst floods to have ever hit Pakistan. The impact has been just humongous. More than a million houses have been damaged and more than a quarter of a million houses completely destroyed. Over 1,500 people have died and nearly 13,000 injured. 7.6 million people have been displaced. Among other places, they've had to take shelter in 5,500 schools which are not yet damaged. So as you can imagine, many kids are not going to school at the moment. If you have been paying the slightest bit of attention, I'm sure you have come across harrowing pictures on TV, in the papers, and online of homes submerged, of vehicles getting washed away, of people being rescued under the most extraordinary circumstances. Unprecedented floods call for rescue and relief measures to match, and that is obviously going on. And that has been the focus of reporting around the event and will be for some time to come. Also going on is a discussion around the causes of the flood. What caused these floods? To what extent was it an inevitable effect of global, regional, and local climate change? Could better or different water management have lessened the severity of the impact? It is also never a bad time to look at the medium and longer term impacts that the floods will have after the waters recede. And what can be done to be better prepared for such events in the future? To get a reading on all that, we have with us Ilyas Masih, Associate Professor of Water Resources Planning from IIT Delft Institute for Water Education, and his colleague Micha Werner, Associate Professor of Hydraulic Engineering. Later on in the podcast, we will be joined by Khurram Mobeen, Associate Professor of Agronomy at MNS University, who apprises us of the flood's impact on agriculture and what kind of assistance is needed by farmers staring at the winter cropping season of October and November with their lands damaged and their machinery lost. Micha and Ilyas, the first thing that one thinks of when talking about the ongoing floods in Pakistan is how enormous they are. We've been talking about how they have been the biggest flood event in Pakistan in X number of years, more than a decade. So how big exactly are they in terms of the magnitude of the flows, in terms of the area affected, the amount of crops lost and means of livelihood, etc.? Could you please lay it out?
It's a question that's on everybody's mind, indeed. How large are these floods compared to previous events? And I think it's very clear that this is a very, very large event. It's affected quite a large part of the country. There's already some imagery of from satellites of the flood, the extent of the flooding. And also reports that it's maybe up to a third of the country that is inundated. Now, I think a third is probably a bit much, but just imagine the size of Pakistan. That's about 800,000 square kilometers. So a third is maybe five or six times the Netherlands. So just imagine, what an extent of water that you can see. And in terms of impacts, I mean, these are quite extensive, and that's maybe more important than the actual area inundated. I was just looking at a report from the Relief Web, and they said up to 1,500 people have been killed by the floods. Millions of homes either destroyed or damaged. And thousands of kilometers of roads damaged, a million livestock lost, and that's of course important for the livelihood of people. So there's no doubt that this is a very, very, very large event.
Micha mentioned most of the things, and of course on the question on crop, because Pakistan is agricultural based country, and crops have been also damaged extensively. That is one point I can add. Look at the scale of area inundated, and crops in Sindh and Balochistan, also in Punjab and the northern part in KP province. So there is also a lot of damage happened to crop, which is the major source of livelihoods of rural people and also support the country's GDP.
So one thing that is being discussed is how big these floods are. And a reference point in that discussion are the 2010 floods, which are also very big, but apparently not as big. How different are these floods from the ones in 2010 in terms of causes, in terms of extent, severity, and impact?
Now, we already mentioned that this flood is a very large one. But the phenomena, interesting, is that you look at that causes floods like this in Pakistan, is perhaps a similar pattern than we saw in 2010, 2011. And this is connected to global circulation patterns. So something called El Niño, La Niña, that people may have heard of. So it's sort of the distribution of heat and warmth in the Pacific Ocean. And it turns out that we're in actually quite a strong La Niña season at the moment. And 2011 was also a La Niña season. And we often see then in these La Niña seasons that there's wetter than normal, or floods in the areas of Pakistan, but actually droughts more to the east. So you may also have heard of the drought in China. So there's a redistribution of moisture, you could say. And but what's particularly interesting in the case of Pakistan is that these floods are caused by a sequence of monsoon depressions that are typically originate in the Bay of Bengal. And they come across India, and then at a certain point, they turn northwards due to the westerlies. And the question is when they turn northwards. And what also happens is that they then suck moisture from the Arabian Sea, which is a quite warm sea. So that's like a continuous source of moisture to feed the rains, if you like. And of course, you have to think of the Himalayas and other mountain chains that these depressions, these monsoon depressions hit, and then it just rains like crazy, basically. So in a sense, it's you know, a similar pattern to the 2011 floods. The 2011 floods were a little bit in a slightly different area. They were a little bit more to the east and to the northeast. So these monsoonal depressions and have been following a more southerly tract. And there's been a quite a sequence of depressions, which is probably due to this La Niña event. So the patterns are similar to previous floods, but it's certainly the case that it's hit a different area, and also that there's been a strong sequence of monsoonal depression. So it's depression after depression after depression, and it's been particularly hitting the mountain chains between Afghanistan and Pakistan, and you often see in the northern areas much more flash flooding, and of course as you go downstream, because the Indus Basin is a very, very large basin, the rivers flow together, and then the main Indus towards the lower provinces of Sindh and Balochistan, it's more riverine flooding, so large scale extensive flooding.
One more difference, I think, from 2010 floods is that what happened this time in the southern part of the country, monsoon rain was very extensive. And you are also listening expressions from UN Secretary General, monsoon on steroids, and from Pakistan Minister of Climate Change, monster monsoons. So actually a lot of rainfall happened in southern part of Pakistan, Sindh and Balochistan. And many part of these regions have recorded rainfall highest, which has not been recorded before, like even close to 1,000 millimeter of rainfall in a month or so. So this is a lot of rainfall. So one of the key difference in these southern part areas that the flood is not only from the river, but it is also because of this extensive rainfall happened that flooded both rural areas, but also urban centers. So that is a big difference. And then if you look at images of 2010 floods and 2022 flood in the southern part, then you can also clearly see images which are being circulated that there is about 100 kilometer of water down in Indus River in southern part of the country. You can see very, very big area indentated. It's not just only river and floodplain, it is now much more. So that is also a key difference in these floods.
In terms of what caused these floods, we have discussed the regional climatic factors, the abnormal weather patterns that happened this year. Apart from that, how much of a factor have the controllables been? The controllables being, for example, water-sensitive planning in general, water management and preparedness. All these things are controlled by people, by governments, by us. So how much of the impact of floods is down to us and the things we did or did not do or did not do well?
I think there are different dimensions of it. And one dimension is preparedness, as you mentioned. And preparedness, you can also see what happens before the event. And if you look at Pakistan, how the preparedness happened before the event, of course, there is flood early warning system. And Pakistan Meteorological Department is closely involved in this. So flood early warning system is there, which issues warning on how much water is going on in different parts of the rivers. Also, early warning about monsoon rains, where it can be more or less. Some anomaly maps are generated. And these early warning and forecasting is communicated to different organizations, stakeholders involved in the management of an event. So there were quite some communication around that, that this season might be above normal. But the question I think here is how much above normal? So that question is not easy to be answered. And what happened is, as I said, is too much. Like at a national level, Pakistan received about, let's say, three times more rainfall. And at in the provinces I'm mentioning, in percentage term, 500% more or even 700, 800% more rainfall. So that scale is very difficult to capture through early warning. For sure, there were some early warning. Other thing very important is, you know, in Pakistan, there is National Disaster Management Authority. And this National Disaster Management Authority prepare monsoon contingency plans every year before the monsoon. So they have a list of actions. And if you look at those actions, they are quite good when it comes to crisis management. When crisis happen, who is responsible, who need to do what during the crisis in rescue, in relief efforts, providing the food, and after the crisis, rehabilitation. So those kind of actions are well defined. And institutions which are responsible are outlined. But the question is, for example, in May this year, when this contingency plan was sent out to a long list of stakeholders, how much it was followed and how much resources were already there? Why I'm saying this, okay, the disaster scale is very big, but if we have followed this properly, maybe the scale of damage could have been less. And then another very important thing is an approach that now we are still following more a crisis management approach. So we need to learn and shift to more risk-based management approaches, where we try to look at vulnerability, exposure, and how to address the root causes of risk. And then in this way, we can do less, we can focus on damage management. However, this requires a shift, but this also requires huge amount of resources, in my view. And looking at what climate change is bringing in Pakistan and other parts of the world, I think we need a lot of resources. And we should try to find those resources from the national budget, from the provincial budget, from the local stakeholders, but also from international donors, like aid from different countries, but also other donor agencies. And if you look at Pakistan, there are examples where such big programs have happened. For example, in 50s and 60s, when country faced waterlogging and salinity, there was large program how to address that. And there was a very big flagship program on National Drainage Program. And when treaty between India and Pakistan happened on Indus, there was large program on infrastructure development on Indus Basin transfer works. I think much more than this scale we need now, how to address climate change and how to ensure water security in country. And I'm sure that looking at what happened, both country and international donors should be ready to fund such an initiative.
The risk-based approach that you speak of, it requires raising of new resources, finding new funding mechanisms, that's clear. At the operational level, what would such an approach look like? What would that mean, a different kind of water management? Would that mean a different approach to urban planning? Would that mean a different approach to agriculture?
I think me as an expert in planning, this is something we should talk about with stakeholders, with local knowledge, as well as experiences we have in Pakistan, but also abroad. We need to find approaches which are more suitable, which are more workable. But there are good examples. For example, if you look at Netherlands, and flooding has been a major policy issues, and there has been flagship programs we can learn from. Room of the River program is very important. So one risk-based management approach is to give river the room. And we can learn from the Netherlands how this has been perceived, how it was discussed with the stakeholders, and how different actions or different projects in this are implemented. This is not just expanding the floodplains. This is not just asking people don't build in the floodplain. It is much more than that. For example, where you can build storages, where you can build bypass channels, where you might need dredging, and where you need to relocate people so that they are in the safe zone, or when you use floodplains and when you will not use it. So there can be many things which can be done, and we can learn also from other countries like Netherlands, and also, you know, these kind of urban flash floods happening in like what happened in Belgium and Germany. Then these kind of floods also in the region, for example, Chennai floods are very famous. A lot of damage happened when a lot of rainfall happened during short period of time, and it was beyond the control of the system and also authorities, so therefore a lot of damage. But then there are also reflection we can learn. So how the system was operated, what lessons we learned from there, and how the urban drainage system is designed and may need changes is important. And even at awareness level, it's important that people know that we need not to block these systems by throwing our rubbish into them. We need to keep them functional. What is there? And these kind of things, I think, are important. And also, we need an urban design which is more climate sensitive. And for that, we also need a good planning and with sound data, but also learning from the country, but also internationally, what we can do. Another important point in a risk-based management approach is data sharing within the country, but also internationally. For example, this Indus Basin, a lot of water comes from India, also from China, from Kabul. If you look at the early warning system now, where how much water is flowing where is mainly displayed within the boundaries of Pakistan. I would say that international cooperation is also very important to implement such a risk-based approach. So we can build on Indus Water Treaty. There is data sharing, but we should specially emphasize how we can share timely and effectively data related to disasters and data related to flood events that might happen. And that can be made public in those forecasts even showing what is the data from India. And this can be linked also if there are also similar initiatives in India. So link to websites and data tracking system should be there. And I think this also helps a lot to get a more complete picture, how much water is where and how much it is coming, and then you can better prepare.
I could maybe indeed add to that, that I agree that I think planning and is an important part, and but it's still the case indeed here that this is a very large event. So
yeah.
It's I think maybe following on from this risk-based approach, I think the concept that we can engineer our way out of this is not a holistic concept in this sense. So indeed a lot can be done in terms of indeed giving the rivers more space, very much a whole catchment approach. I mean, I think that's the Indus Basin is quite interesting in a sense that indeed a lot of the source of flooding comes from the upper parts, besides indeed as Elias mentioned, sort of extreme rainfall that causes flooding let's say in the cities or in the low-lying areas. But a whole catchment approach is extremely important. But with very, very large floods such as this, indeed, one must also be prepared that there will be flooding and people will be affected. So early warnings systems, which are partly indeed data, are very important. And maybe just to think about this data, I myself was involved in operational forecasting in Pakistan in the end of the 90s, when data sharing was actually non-existent. And so indeed at that time, I recall also being in a monsoon flood in Lahore when we were receiving no data whatsoever from the headwaters, which were all in India. But that has come a long way, I think, but still needs to come, go much, much further in terms of data sharing and indeed getting a whole sort of basin picture. And then effectively using that information, that comes back again to planning. So technical information is very important, but it's the response of people also, of authorities, but also the people to indeed be very aware of what can happen in a flood like this, and how should I prepare myself? What should I do with my livestock? Either evacuation locations, let's say, particularly in the flatter areas, where should I go? So it's really not just the systems, but involving all the communities that can be affected and all the people that can be affected to respond effectively.
Yeah, I think this is the topic we can just continue talking, because a lot can be done on the topic, and new paradigm shift is also needed. For example, this is a security issue, and you see in the country these days at such a big scale, we have shortage of tents, for example, and many other things. What you can see, for example, in under climate change, if you address these security challenges, how many helicopters you have to evacuate people, how many boats, how many skilled people, how many tents are available. I think every year you need to also look at what is available in the country, because this is also in now under climate change, different level of thinking. How many volunteers in urban setting are there to rescue people together with the armed forces, as well as other stakeholders involved in this operation?
Just a point of clarification, if we go back a bit, you mentioned floods, Chennai floods. In the case of Chennai floods, it is easy to see how it was brought about largely due to bad spatial planning in urban areas. But when we see images from these floods in Pakistan, we see large open swaths of land. We see rangeland, we see agricultural land. Is spatial planning also a factor in exacerbating floods in rural areas, in these sort of open areas where there is less built-up space, less concrete structure, where it is less clear how human intervention or real estate development could have exacerbated the situation?
When it comes to Chennai floods, I think those rivers which were overflown, they are much smaller compared to Indus. And also the rainfall concentration was also in the area near the urban centers. I don't know how much it could have been better managed. It's a big question. But still, of course, we should try our best to manage things as best as possible. When it comes to Pakistan, here in this case of, for example, southern part of the country, it is, of course, a large swath of land which is open, which is rural, has been inundated. And of course, rural population has been impacted. There, I think the key question is looking at mainly the floodplains and extent of floodplains, and also learning from previous floods. For example, when River Indus overflows, what are the areas which got mostly impacted? And then there you need to do more spatial planning or prioritizing your rescue missions if you like. Another important thing is also there are lakes also like Manchar Lake, you might be hearing in the news also. When this lake get exceptionally large amount of water, then how these villages which are around that area, how those villages can be protected. And similarly in Balochistan, there is a lot of flash flooding happening. And there is also a lot of spate irrigation and other resources which people use these floods for. And then there should be also some planning how those can be best used. And if an event happened that impacts, let's say, these rural landscape, where are the, let's say, protected areas? Where are the areas people can take refuge? So these kind of planning is very important. When it comes to the north, the question is a little bit different because there is a lot of tourism involved. And also, if you look at those rivers, they are not, of course, flowing all the year around. And many years get not very big floods. And there is a temptation that people start using these floodplains even for things which are permanent, start building there. And moving their livestock and so on, or constructing hotels. Even in the presence of laws, like in Pakistan, there are laws which prohibit how much far you should move your constructions from these sites. So I think that is very important. And you see also in the images and also in the news, a lot of discussion, how this encroachment could have been prohibited, so that the loss of property and life could be minimized. So there, I think country need to take a bit more stricter approach. And also the laws and policies are there, how you put them into implementation so that people who are in the end got impacted, they can be saved.
A vast majority of the people who will listen to this podcast will be from urban areas. And as urban people ourselves, dare I say it, it is clear to us how urban floods affect urban lives. But could you please walk us through the eyes of a farmer or another member of a rural community, so we get a sense of how rural floods affect rural lives and rural livelihoods?
I was grown in a rural area in Narowal district of Pakistan. And I have faced myself several floods in my life, coming from seasonal small stream rivers. But also in 1988, there was a big flood in Ravi River, where I was stranded on my rooftop for 3 days to see how this flood is damaging. So I think I can speak and relate to this question. First of all, you know, it's very common that rural livelihoods are agriculture based. And livestock and crops are the two mainstays. So first, I think set of impact is on the crop. So in that case, for example, in the area I come from, rice crop was extensively damaged. Now, if you look at these floods in the south, cotton, rice, sugarcane, and vegetables, so many crops so destroyed. So this is the first. Second is livestock. The third is, I think, rural areas. If you look at the strength and the type of material used in the construction of homes, many of those homes cannot withstand with such a big flood. even when heavy rain happen, the houses collapse. And often these houses are of poor people. So I think there is also something can be learned, how you can build houses which are more strong and can withstand such events in rural areas. And when you are building these rural areas, how you can channel your funding in a more appropriate way, but also guiding people to do better spatial planning so that they are not again hit by the next event, or at least the damage is minimal. So these three things I can think of. Of course, there are also many other aspects related to that, like health system. In rural areas, you see they don't have access to health facilities as much as urban centers have. Those facilities need to be better provided. Also, during and after flood events, those need also more consistent provision and follow-up so that these people are not that much impacted by disease. In this case, we also hear a lot of cases, both in urban areas, but also in other parts of the country, dengue fever because of this urban flooding happening. And we need to do how to overcome such epidemics like cholera, diarrhea, and these kind of things. So these few points are, I think, very important for rural people.
I don't have the firsthand experience in Pakistan that you have, Ilyas, indeed, which is very interesting. I guess also, as you mentioned, with livestock and also crops, it's people's livelihoods. So it's very difficult to say, okay, we're just going to leave, my home for some time while the area is flooded. Because the question is, what happens with that livestock? And okay, the crops may be lost. So it's and particularly livestock is very valuable because that can be also be used to recover from the flood in a sense. But so these are very important questions that tie people to a certain place, if you like. And of course, this also happens in urban areas. But I think in the rural areas, people are much more tied with the land, obviously, because that is the basis of their livelihood. So that's working with people, and this is more in the emergency response to evacuate. It's not just a simple question of evacuating. It's okay, what happens to my, what happens when I come back? It's also a very big question that's on people's minds. So it's very important to work with communities to have an understanding of, okay, how can we live through this and also live after an event like this.
Staying on agriculture, when agriculture takes a hit, it does not impact just rural areas, of course, but also urban areas. Agriculture feeds the entire country, for example. So given the enormity of the hit that agriculture in these two rather large areas of Pakistan has received, what kind of impact is the rest of the country likely to continue to experience in the times to come?
When millions of hectares crops are damaged, certainly, this has an issue related to food. So as you are already seeing some food imports happening, food coming from China and other countries, and in the future, there might be more imports needed to meet the food demands. And I see that decision makers are working on this. Hopefully, they can make a good plan for next season. Around that, so that is key. Another important thing is how you mobilize what is available in the country, and how you share what is available in the country across different districts, across different provinces, is also very important, and that a lot of good planning is also needed in this regard. When it comes to international response, I think that is also good to know, that in such kind of huge disasters, how you see countries helping, it's also very encouraging to see that many countries have helping and giving food aid, which can be used both in urban centers and in rural areas. But one can also think of, for example, when a country is hit by such a big disaster, how, for example, in a season or a year, how international food supply chains can be connected in a way that can facilitate rebuilding.
Going back a bit, zooming out and looking at the big picture, of course, a big part of the big picture is climate change. I wanted to understand from the two of you, what's the narrative around climate change in Pakistan? You are scientists, so obviously you have your own understanding of climate change. But I would love to understand from you, what is the general perception, the people's narrative around climate change in Pakistan? Is it considered to be a significant issue? What are the perceived causes? And in terms of governance and management, what are some of the adaptation and preparedness mechanisms in place?
What is quite clear, indeed, there's been some recent reports already done, for example, for climate change attribution. So that these events, let's say, can be attributed to climate change. It's not that clear in the case of this event, but it's relatively sure that you can attribute, you know, such large events to climate change, that they will happen or are expected to happen more frequently and will become more intense. So that's quite clear. I could imagine, I mean, you know, more in the general perspective, that while that understanding is clear, particularly to people, as you mentioned, in rural areas, yeah, they need to struggle with this event, but they need to struggle with climatic events in general. So now we're talking about extreme floods, but perhaps in 3-4 years, we'll be in a drought situation. And again, people will have to struggle to maintain their livelihoods under these conditions. So typically under, you know, the more, let's say, farmers are and rural people, they're not so concerned with this long-term climate change because they're you know, that's a very sort of far away picture. They're more concerned with how do I manage to maintain my livelihood through the climate conditions as they happen. Of course, at the country level, and this comes back to the point on planning that Ilyas also is discussing, there's much more awareness. But how you deal with that awareness at the local level is very difficult because of people's you know, struggle with their daily lives, if you like. So that's a huge challenge, not just in Pakistan, but I think globally.
In terms of awareness, indeed, there is increasing awareness in Pakistan, and among also general people, because these impacts of climate change are the ones which are now really faced by people of Pakistan. For example, if you look at short-term perspective, look at the heat waves country has faced in this year, in this ongoing let's say season, summer season. And the heat waves, when you talk about them, you can already see how much country is facing extreme temperatures, and the record are broken, like around 53 degree centigrade recorded in Pakistan, and also the cycle of heat waves and also their duration. And how different parts are impacted, especially urban centers. And then people awareness that why these events are happening, and then they can relate it to global warming. And then awareness among people are raising. Also, when a lot of rainfall is happening in short duration of time, people have not seen it before. And I think they can also relate it that, okay, this is something new. And then link mostly to climate change. And also, you know, Pakistan depends a lot on glaciers and how snow and glacier melt is changing, and also even causing floods in northern part of the country, which people are able to relate that these phenomena are not the one they used to see, or at least at the scale and the frequency of them has been intensified. There is a lot of awareness among people that climate change is playing a major role in intensifying these events, and the scale and magnitude at which these events are happening and the damage they are doing to environment, but also socioeconomic sectors. And they can also link it to global change. When you see the narrative from ministries and let's say policymakers, decision makers, and politicians, it is quite clear that they know that global changes have impacted on Pakistan, despite the fact that when you look at greenhouse gas emissions, Pakistan's emissions are less than 1% or so. But Pakistan is among the top 10 countries impacted by climate change. Then if you look at the scale of the challenge, then they also see that, okay, they need to do something internally and mobilize resources, but also look at international funds and where international help in terms of knowledge sharing and in terms of mobilizing resources is needed. There is a need certainly to shift when it comes to mitigation and adaptation. Of course, mitigation efforts at global level are very important and countries should play a part in them. But Pakistan, adaptation is very, very important in short term, but also in medium and long. This flood happened in 2010, there was a big flood. You don't know when such a big flood will happen and where. So adaptation is needed, and that also need a national response, but also provincial and local response with a lot of good planning, but also a lot of resources which can be mobilized from Pakistan and internationally.
Do you think it is the moral responsibility of the international community, or specifically the biggest emitters, to contribute towards efforts to make Pakistan and indeed other climate vulnerable countries more climate resilient?
This is a very good question. I think this is also internationally quite well recognized question and discourse. How I see it, I'm not expert on the topic, but how I see it, I see that there is a lot of recognition to this question. And also there is responsibility and efforts which try to help countries which are most impacted by climate change. Looking at the scale of those efforts, I can say that we need to accelerate and we need to target to help those nations, Pakistan and many other nations, which are badly impacted by climate change, have less to do when it comes to mitigation, but need a lot of resources to adapt to climate change, like these island nations and also other countries like Pakistan. When you look at how this disaster is currently being responded, for example, UN Secretary General came to Pakistan and how sympathetically he has spoken and given the call, and how countries are helping. Look at the aid, what is coming from, for example, USAID, countries in Arab region, and China, and many other countries, Europe, and so on. So when you look at this, I think we as human also see where, when there is a calamity, we have hearts to stand by. So that is encouraging. Of course, this is a kind of still crisis management. We need to take one step further and not forget these events when the rain subsides or the flood water subsides, and build on that momentum, as you said, to build the resilience of these societies. And for that, we need long-term programs where international funding can help, international collaboration can help, where countries who are among the biggest polluters can also demonstrate that how they are helping these countries in the long term to build a resilient future, help them in adaptation measures. And I think as a country, as let's say people living on this planet, we need to help each other. Of course, you can always point fingers here and there, but that does not help. There is a crisis whole world is facing. We need to deal it together. So we should take responsibility both at our home but also international.
Thank you, Mika. Thanks, Elias, for sharing your insights. And now a word from Khurram Mubeen, Assistant Professor of Agronomy at M&S University in Multan in Pakistan's Punjab province. Punjab did not bear the brunt of the floods like Sindh and Balochistan did, and most of the province is no longer submerged. But districts like Dera Ghazi Khan and Rajanpur in the southeast are still reeling under the impact of the floodwaters that flowed through them and onto Balochistan and Sindh. Apart from loss to life and property, they had a major impact on agriculture, which people will continue to feel for some time to come. The winter cropping season of October-November, called the Rabi season, is almost here, and many farmers in these areas have lost their land and their machinery.
People are displaced, the livestock is gone, land is degraded, and the productive lands turn into unproductive lands. This time we have one more experience that is sort of worst experience is that the floods were in huge quantity and very rapid. So much more of the silt and new layers of soils coming from the foothills and from the mountains and the sediments those came in those areas. Even to a depth of, we can say, I have witnessed more than 4 feet in a field. So this time more silt and sediments have been deposited on the command areas where crops are grown. The forests, there are no forest system. There are scarce trees and some vegetation. Those are natural. Those are just vanished away. Making the soil and the air and the environment totally more barren, especially those areas are already scarce of the vegetation, already scarce of the trees due to aridity of the environment. And of course, the crops, one of the main livelihood for them, of course, livestock is the first one in our areas and in current areas. But crop production is also important to them. According to a recent survey of vegetation index from Moody's, I have come to know that about 0.3 million acres of land, which was most of them was under crops, that got vanished. What can be done immediately in those areas is that now we are heading actually the Rabi season for the winter crops has already been initiated, has been started. Most of the farmers have lost their everything, and their all belongings, not only seeds, not only machinery, even the soil is gone, the upper soil productive layer is gone. It is very, very urgent. And it is immediately needed to support them because the seeds have gone. They do not have the seeds to plant the crops, and they even do not have the machinery, the tractor, the equipment for land preparation and crop sowing.
If you want to support the farmers of Punjab and Sindh and Balochistan to plant their rabi crops and salvage something out of a bad situation, please contact the Flood-Based Livelihoods Network. Please check floodbase.org for details. A link is also in the show notes.